Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette on Free FM, CBS FM, and Mike Godot back in the studio. And we have, I don't know, I can't think of a show so far I've been more excited about. I didn't sleep last night. I was so excited about talking here to this guest. I'm going to lead up to it. We have had aristocrats, people in the Aristocrats movie on the show before. Louis Black, Lisa Lampanelli, Howie Mandel, David Brenner, Wendy Liebman, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Prevenza, Bobby Slayton, Carrot Top, Trey Parker, Drew Carey, Bob Saget, and now my mother's favorite comedian and my favorite comedian, Phyllis Diller.
What a list.
I really couldn't be happier to talk to you. If you want to talk about people that changed the world, changed the way women were seen, I mean, you can talk about the feminist movement, but my mom, who was a tough, tough woman, every time you would come on the air, she was a bit older than you, and every time you'd come on the air, you were just an inspiration to her.
Oh, I love that.
Because she thought that you had, you know, you weren't playing a role, you weren't just, I mean, playing the role of a woman who was submissive and just anything she was told.
Oh, no.
You were up there and outspoken, and every time you were on, she would turn the TV up and just howl.
Your mother was one swell gal.
She really was. She was a tough old broad. And I mean, of all the entertainers she liked, you were far and away her
favorite.
And I would just watch you, and seeing somebody that did stand up, which is such an old boys club and still is.
Yes.
But not as much because of you.
Especially my end of it, the stand-up thing.
Yeah, the stand-up, of course.
Where, yeah, where you're not just a comic actress and you're not just a comedian. Mm-hmm. You're a comic. It means you're in charge of your own material.
It's absolutely.
And you write it. And you, it's all your deal. And you're all alone. And that is the old boys club.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also, there are other things a little less apparent to people watching, which is stand-up comedy is really about authority. You know,
about what?
Authority. You're up there
authority.
Alone.
Authority. Oh, power.
You have to control the audience.
You must be in control or you're going to fail. And there is great power. Great power. The larger the audience, the more power. Because you're using their power.
And what year did you start doing stand-up?
1955.
Wow. 1955.
In a little room that seated 170 people on those deck chairs, or what do you call them? Director chairs.
Sure.
170 people, but by golly, they must have been the right 170.
And you got in from being a copywriter, right? You were an ad person?
Yes, I loved that. I prided myself on writing funny ads. And I guess I was probably the first person to use space that I felt nothing on the space was a selling point as much as the written word.
And this is all in Ohio, right?
Oh, no. That was in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. And where did you first pop on stage?
San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yes.
And had you seen a woman do stand-up comedy before you did it?
Yes.
Who'd you see?
There was a woman at the Purple Onion. Her name was Jory Remus. And she was a very sort of a chanteuse type with a little comedy. Mm-hmm. In other words, she was not making any attempt to be a stand-up. She was more the import from France with the hair hanging down and the sultry and a few funny things. But you see, and the fact that I'd never been in a nightclub before.
You never had?
Oh, no. But I did go to see her. And, of course, that made me realize that if she could do what she was doing, there were some things that I had been doing for years for free for organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, like the PTA and this, that, and the other. And I thought, well, that's the sort of thing that mine is funnier.
And the character that you came up with, the character that was Phyllis Diller that we all knew and clearly had, how close was the character the first time you walked on stage?
Well, I didn't have the character yet.
Uh-huh.
I walked on. I looked like the woman next door. Mm-hmm. It's what I was, the woman next door. excuse me. And it took me years to evolve the persona, the crazy woman mm-hmm. with the crazy hair. Because when I started out, I actually had brown hair and dressed, normal dress, cotton dress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was right out of the kitchen. And learned little by little by little how to be on stage.
And did you, how much of that was intellectual? How much did you say, I have to have the power over an audience so I should have a stronger character? And how much did you just feel your way through and fall into?
I only got to the word power maybe 3 years ago. Honest to God. I mean, it was there and I was using it, but the reality of it never took verbal shape.
Because, you know, for my mom, and in no way, you know, am I saying that my mom was a fan of you and I wasn't. I was absolutely nuts. But my mom and I were the same person. I don't think that anyone's ever been closer to their mom. And you would come on, and I don't think she cared. She thought you were really funny, but she didn't care very much about the jokes. She loved that you existed as a person. Mm-hmm. You'd walk out on one of these shows with all these men who were you know, backslapping and doing all that stuff, and you absolutely held your own, and you weren't setting other people up, but you were doing the punchlines. And my mother just perceived that as, here is a woman who is playing with the big boys and is not doing anything to set them up. She's just, and she would always say that Phyllis Diller, she's her own person.
My God.
That was what it meant to my mom. It meant the world to her.
And you know, speaking of mothers, in looking back, mm-hmm. I realized that my mother was a trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it. When it's your mother, I didn't know mm-hmm. it. I was just a little kid.
Sure.
Because here's what...
A lot of us meet our mothers when we're little kids.
most of us.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was a small town, 50,000, that's small.
Mm-hmm.
She wore rouge when it was unheard of.
Uh-huh.
She had a shingle bob. Everybody had hair down the back, up in a bun.
Uh-huh.
And she colored her hair.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
And that's in Ohio.
In Ohio, this little town of 50,000 people where morays were like concrete.
Sure.
You know, it was like the Ten Commandments. And but I didn't think anything of it at the time. But as I look back, this mm-hmm. woman, and in fact, women didn't even have the vote when my mother was young.
Oh, of course, of course.
See, and she was a bloomer girl, meaning she was pushing for women's vote.
Sure.
Yes.
Now, how'd you get from Ohio to San Francisco to start your career?
No. Let me think of it. I had a husband who was working during that World War II
mm-hmm.
at a bomber plant in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And he got himself transferred to Alameda Naval Air Station, which put me very close to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's an island, and that island has no cemeteries. You cannot die there. If you do, you just have to stand in the closet.
And you were divorced when you first hit the stage, right?
He's the one that insisted that I.
Oh, really?
That I try that. He said, "You're very funny, and you must be a comic. You've got to become a comic. You've got to give him credit for taking an objective view of a person he studied closely."
And you've got, I'm trying to think, I saw you do stand-up I saw you many times, but you didn't know who I was when I was going to see you. But I saw you the last time in Vegas, I believe the last time you appeared in Vegas.
Yeah, yes.
And they did that movie, which is finally, the movie's finally going to be around.
It's called Good Night, We Love You.
Good Night, We Love You.
Yeah.
And the official website is goodnightweloveyou.com, all spelled out in real words. The U is not a U, but goodnightweloveyou.com. And that'll be coming out home release on DVD December 5th in time for the holidays. And you got everybody in it. We're in it.
You're in it.
But also Don Rickles, Roseanne, Lily Tomlin, Red Buttons, Bonnie Hunt, David Brenner, Rich Little, and just a ton of people. And I haven't seen it yet. Did it come out good?
Oh, it won 3 first prizes as a documentary.
Yeah.
At these film festivals.
I can't wait. Does it have any of your stand-up in it, or is it
all
mostly
it.
Talking about? Oh, really? It's one of those shows?
It's a shot of my last show.
Oh, that's good. Because when we saw you, Teller and I saw, I think it was, you know, certainly the last tour, but probably the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not believe, you know, many people who are great stand-ups when they're younger, when they get a little older, it goes into more storytelling.
Yeah.
It goes into more, like, you know, Ringo Starr of the Beatles. You're in the room with the Beatle. And when you go to see, when I went to see you, there was none of this, oh, you get to see Phyllis Diller. It was joke.
Oh, yeah.
And just that same staccato, powerful style, and just owning a room, and completely, just like all the other times I've seen you. And there's also a CD. I mean, and if you don't know, if you haven't memorized big hunks of Phyllis Diller's material, then you don't know anything about comedy. And there's the comedy record called Phyllis Diller Live from Los Angeles, and it's available at laugh.com. So, I mean, pick that up. And it probably eventually will be on iTunes, I imagine, too. So the people that are living in the future that don't play physical things but just download them will be able to hear you, too. When was your favorite? What was your favorite stand-up show? When did you say to yourself, now I've made it, this is it, hooray?
Oh, there were so many. I mean, I got good and I enjoyed it. And enjoyed every show.
What I've been thinking about lately a lot, because of there's a thing on the web called YouTube, and there's, you know, there's I guess I give the web addresses for all of your stuff because I want people to really there's also a blog about your art. I'll get to that later, but phyllisdiller.blogspot.com.
That's brand new.
Yeah. But I've been thinking a lot because all the tapes just came up on the web of Tiny Tim. And you were on the show when Tiny Tim got married, right?
That's right, on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show.
40 million people, like the most
Tiny
watched.
Tiny requested that I be there. He insisted. I have no idea why.
But do you know? I mean,
I knew
that was a cultural phenomenon, the whole
Wasn't
Tiny
that,
Tim
did
thing.
Did you know that was about his 40th phony name?
Yes, I do. I do.
You knew that.
Yes, I did. Did you know him before the Tiny Tim name?
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I just read about
that.
And he was strange. He was not just your ordinary, normal person.
Yeah, there was no character at all. That was him.
No, he wanted to be in show business.
Mm-hmm.
And there came a time after he divorced Miss
Vicky,
and I guess he was married again.
I've been married, I think, twice after that. Yeah.
Was he really?
Yeah. Very briefly.
But he sort of disintegrated in a way.
And was playing circuses and so on.
Oh, dear.
Yes, he was. And I just was so interested in what it must have felt like to be on the set for that wedding. And you, it was the most, I guess there are many ways to break it down, but that was the most watched Johnny Carson show.
That's right. That was right. It was, I've got to call it an honor to be invited.
Sure, sure.
And I had forgotten that it was going to be formal, black tie,
uh-huh.
And I was arrived in a short dress. So I had to borrow a dress from one of the lady bookers.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget. It was purple wool.
And were you there just for the act,
show.
Or did you also did you do any stand-up that night?
No. The whole show was the wedding, and it was very beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And Tiny had written his own words, of course.
Right.
Something about don't get puffed up.
Yeah. And he wouldn't eat in front of people, and he showered 5 times a day.
He did?
Oh, yeah, there's all sorts
He's weird.
Very, very weird.
He's weird.
And how many times did you do the Carson show?
I beg your pardon?
How many times did you do the Carson show?
I never kept track.
Never kept track.
Because I started out with the originator, Steve Allen, then inherited by Jack Parr, then inherited by Johnny Carson, and then actually Jay Leno.
Uh-huh. And did you hosted the Tonight Show many times, didn't you?
No, only once.
Only
out
once?
In New York when it was still at the Hudson Theater.
Uh-huh.
A long time ago.
Uh-huh.
It was a mess. It was just a mess.
It was hard to host it?
Well, it's just too long a story to bother with.
We got time. If you got a story, we'll hear it.
Well, when you are going to do a gigantic thing like that, you should be alone and quiet and be preparing to go up into the studio. I had 3 drunk agents visiting me at the time, laughing and giggling. And by the time I got up there, I was a nervous wreck because I had no time to prepare. It was like being thrown on the altar and marrying a stranger.
Really? Really?
It was worse.
And who were your guests? Do you remember at all? Who the guests were?
I don't even remember.
I don't even remember at all. It was just a blur.
It was a night to forget. What a horrible, and what a great opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Much too soon. I got far too many opportunities too soon before I knew how to handle them.
You know, there are many people in show business who have all sorts of different things they do. But there are Martin Mull is a serious painter.
In big
good guitar
museums.
Player.
Yeah.
A good guitar player and a very funny comic. And you're one of the only other people I know who a musician and a painter and a comic.
Most comics are musicians.
Yeah, a lot of.
So many. Mm-hmm. I mean, that there's another list.
Yeah.
No, I didn't bring it.
Right.
Where all the comics who are great musicians. Johnny Carson was a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Sid Caesar, saxophone player.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bilko.
Silvers.
Phil Silvers.
Phil Silvers, clarinet. What about Woody Allen, clarinet?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the list is endless. They are all...
And when did you start piano?
Age 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how often did you play? You played with symphonies and so on, right?
I played with 100.
Really?
Major symphonies.
And when was that part of your career? When did you have time for that?
It was from 70 to 80.
Uh-huh.
And that meant that it had to be... I had to practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
And at 80, there came a time with my scheduling where there was no way that you could get a piano and do the practice.
And
so I had to give it up.
And what pieces did you play?
I played a Beethoven concerto and some Bach inventions.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sang 2 Broadway shows. And the rest was funny talk.
Oh, I see.
I did a whole new character. Her name was Dame Ilia Dilia. And she was very grand, dressed like the Queen of England with the tiara and the feathers. You see, a whole different character.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. And she was not married to Fang. She was a whole different character.
Sure.
And, of course, it fit the grandness of symphony.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I talked, it was all music jokes.
Uh-huh.
About Bach
uh-huh.
and his wife. They had 20 children. That's a joke right there. He had the first piano bench that opened into a bed. And by golly, when that music stopped, Mrs. Bach broke out in a cold sweat.
And you toured for 10 years?
For 10 years, we worked those 100 in there.
Mm-hmm. And when did you first play Vegas?
Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, very early. Oh, God. In the 50s.
Mm-hmm. And you were...
I played every major room.
Every room in Vegas?
Every major room, excepting now they've got new hotels.
Sure.
Which I have not played.
Mm-hmm. And when you played Vegas, who were you on the bill with? And what are some of the people?
I had the star spot.
Uh-huh. And, I meant for opening acts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, singers like Enzo Stuardi.
Mm-hmm.
And then La Femina. Can't think of his name. That awful.
I'm not going to be able to.
You're not going to be able to think. Well, always a male singer.
Uh-huh.
Excepting once I fought to have the guy that does all the voices.
Rich Little.
Rich Little. Yeah. And they fought it. They said, we can't have 2 comics.
Mm-hmm.
We can't have 2 comics on the show. And I said, if they come to see me, they love comedy, and that's what they want. And you know what? It put him...
Sure.
As a big star in Vegas.
As that act. We're going to be back with Phyllis Diller, one of my biggest heroes right after this. This is Penn Jillette on the Free FM. Michael Godeau back in Vegas, and we will be back after this. It's Penn Jillette and Michael Godeau back in Vegas. I'm in L.A. with one of one of my big heroes, Phyllis Diller, and also my mom's biggest hero in show business. And I remember we went to your house to shoot The Aristocrats, and you were kind enough to show us around. I remember being in the room with your wigs and costumes and thinking, if my mother had lived long enough for me to be able to call her and tell her where I was, she would have gone crazy. What did you do with the costumes? I mean,
they're just hanging there.
No, I mean, how did you design them and get them together?
Well, I had my own designer for 17 years, and she made them all, unless they were made at NBC or in Australia or someplace else by show people.
Yeah.
But I have a big thing about clothing.
Yeah.
Always have. And some of them are in the Smithsonian Institute. My Vietnam dress is there, and so is my symphony gown. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of that.
And can you describe those to us?
The symphony gown was a gorgeous formal, a white Marussia. That's an old Italian designer. Mm-hmm. Lots of beads and pearls and very elegant, very elegant. Mm-hmm. And the Vietnam dress was on purpose something that I didn't want to bother the sweet nurses that were helping with the show in Vietnam. Some of the ladies took things that had to be ironed and chiffon, and that dress that I took, I just took the one, was kind of a metallic thing that you just get it out, like putting on a pipe.
Now, when you wanted a new, see, I've been wearing, in the Penn and Teller show, we've been wearing gray suits for 35 years.
I mean, you look so wonderful.
But when you wanted to have a new look, did you work with the designers? Did they just bring about this? Or did you say, I want something metallic?
She was a retainer.
I'm talking retainer. Fashion now.
I'm
doing what I can.
Here's when I'm not one of the boys.
Yeah.
When you get into fashion. Oh, but you see, I have a thing about men, the way they dress, and you guys look so good. You look so right. Because, of course, you're off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't be right to dress that way. You look so... Mm.
Yeah, we wanted to dress kind of like everybody. That was our point.
Well, you're way ahead of everybody.
But you always had, you know, I'm going to keep coming back to my mom. First of all, because I'm a mama's boy and I was very close to her, but also because you meant so much to her. They would say at the top of the show, you know, tonight's guest, you know, and always the headline bill, you know, Phyllis Diller. And my mother would sit there in her chair with my father and go, what's she going to be wearing?
That did matter.
Yeah.
One of my maddest fans remembers one dress that where I put my arms out, it formed a perfect upside down V. And I said, it's just a little something to bat around it. And it just turned him on. He just thought that was a brilliant line. And I always started every show referring to what I had on.
Yep.
In fact, that I used to say, you know, here is this dress that's just way over the top, far too many sparklies and diamonds and sweet sequins, and I'd say, you think I'm overdressed? This is my slip.
And who were the people that killed you when you saw him perform that you just loved?
Rickles, Newhart.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same guys that were doing it at the same time I was.
Oh, sure, yeah.
The same, and Shecky Green was so funny and such a talent. Beautiful voice. He could sing like you. I loved all those people. I mean, let's see. But there weren't any girls. There was just me for a while.
Did you ever meet Elvis?
Elvis?
Yeah.
On purpose. I mean, I've got to meet Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it arranged and I went backstage. And after we said hello, we were through.
What year was this about?
It was one of the times when he was playing the Hilton.
So Vegas would be in
one of his second or last times.
70s.
And I remember the room was full of men and people. And late the next time I played and had that room myself, I realized the room was pretty big. But when I visited him, it was like a crowded elevator. It was his mafia.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We had everybody with him.
Yeah, so you played the Hilton on the stage that Elvis played?
Oh, well, yes, I did. Of course. I played them all.
But all you said was hello to Elvis, and that was it?
Well, we had nothing to talk about.
Yeah, well, you know.
I didn't know what to say, and he is not a talkative person.
No, he was not.
I guess not.
He was not at all.
Somebody like me, he didn't know what to say to me.
Did you meet the Beatles?
Never.
Never? Never on a show with the Beatles?
No.
Not in all that time?
But, oh, my God. When they first came over from England, my children were of the age.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Beatles was everything to them. And they went and saw the Beatles live.
Uh-huh.
And I must say, what a group.
Oh, you go with them to see them?
No.
Okay.
I finally met George Harrison in Australia. What's her name? The girl that did those. Here we go with names.
We'll get it.
Well, when you're 90, you
just give it. Give us enough so that Glenn can yell it out.
Okay.
Glenn got Jerry Vail during the break. He'll get you. He'll get the next one for you.
Those two girls that did a funny show together, and one is. But oh, we'll be here forever.
Goldie Hawn.
Oh no.
Just a shot. Just a shot.
Good shot.
But you met George Harrison.
But someone introduced me. It's in the lobby hotel. I never connected that he was a Beatle.
Oh.
I never realized it until on the way home from Australia. I was in a magazine, and here's George Harrison.
There you go.
That's the guy I just met. So, you see, I've been seen for some time.
And Bob Hope was really important to you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he just took me under his wing. And put me in everything.
Yeah, you did
television, radio. TV and movies. You know, but he didn't just put me in. He allowed me to be co-billed.
And what kind of guy was Bob Hope?
Generous. Because when we went to Vietnam, I get over there and here's 20,000 guys sitting on the ground waiting to laugh, and my material was absolutely wrong. Wrong. After the first show, he had the writers write something where I had every punchline and we worked double.
Really?
That's generosity. Really?
Now, Bob Hope didn't write much of the stuff he did.
Oh,
he had
no,
writers.
I had eight writers.
But what percentage of the stuff that you did you write? I thought it was most all, didn't you?
Most all of it. Yeah.
And did you see yourself as mostly a writer or performer? Did you like doing other people's material?
Other people's material?
Did you like doing that, like in movies, when presumably someone else would write it?
Oh, I see what you mean, like a book show.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of book shows.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it very much because I can say actress.
And speaking of the hats that you've worn, you know, we talked about music and your comedy, of course. When did you get into the painting? When did the painting come up?
Well, when I was a little kid, I painted. I drew pictures all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I drew legs, ballerinas, faces, and I'm still doing it. But I picked it up in about 1986 and made a real hobby of it. And now that I'm retired, I do it a lot.
Really? How much do you paint?
You're one of my favorite customers.
Yes, I know. I have a beautiful, beautiful painting of
called Hard Hat.
Yeah, Hard Hat of. And the reason I was so taken with that is that Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones said after something had fallen on stage, he famously said during the 60s, rock and roll is a hard hat job.
Oh,
and I just love that ties in.
I didn't realize that.
And
isn't that amazing?
You're
so tall, you need a hard hat to get through life.
my nephew, who is now in his 40s, because my sister's a lot older than I am. My nephew lives in this very small house, and I would bang my head. It was a New England house that was designed.
Oh.
So he, for a joke, when I went to visit him, put a hard hat out, and I didn't even take it as a joke. Just put it on and walked around and just banged that hard hat everywhere.
Well,
you know, my parents built the house I grew up in by themselves. My mother, you know, they carried every piece of lumber, hammered every nail.
Brilliant.
And the doorways were, when I was in high school, too small for me to walk through. So I could walk around this little house they built, just ducking my head every time. So hard hats are important to me.
Well, that I'm so glad that I did that. You got it.
It's just beautiful. I just love, I was going to say I love the style, but you go all over the place for all different styles.
I experiment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, I'm in progress.
And do you play the piano very often?
I can't
at all?
Do that.
Can't do it anymore?
Well, once you stop playing the piano, unless you play every day, you really can't play.
Mm-hmm. So you,
I don't do that. You can't do it all at once.
No.
There's only 24 hours.
I want to talk about my favorite painting that I think probably of anybody's, but it's yours. That's in the entrance hall. Do you want to describe that, or do you want me to?
You do it.
Okay. There's this painting that she has, and rather large, and it's red with a yellow circle in the middle that looks like a geometric pattern, looks like an abstract, looks like it's somebody just playing with shapes and how the yellow color goes over the red and so on. And then the title of it is "And Now" with an ellipsis. And the second you read the title, you realize that it's a painting of a spotlight hitting a curtain right before an entertainer is about to come out. And when you first showed me that and I read the title, and Paul Provenza said, you've got to see this, I remember just getting that heart-pounding feeling of that instant before someone walks out on stage.
I
love that you also did it from the audience point of view.
Yeah,
many entertainers would have
had
a lot of that. Just
there's
that second.
Action in it.
Just that moment. I love the fact that it's a joke on something that's abstract becoming representational, that I just think is terrific.
Yes.
So we have artist, pianist, comedian, person who changed the world, Phyllis Diller, one of my biggest heroes. And we're going to be back with more of Phyllis Diller after this. My name is Penn Jillette, and this is CBS Radio Free FM, and Michael Godeau is back in Vegas. Hey, Godeau.
Howdy.
Penn Jillette here in Los Angeles, Michael Godeau in Las Vegas. We're on the free FM, CBS FM, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com, talking to my hero, Phyllis Diller. And she's got a book out, Like a Lampshade in a Whorehouse, that is the story of your life, kind of, sort of-ish.
Yes. But
with a lot of jokes.
That sounds so awful. I'm not sure that's a good title. It sounds like I had something to do with a horror house, which I didn't.
Okay. We'll have that clear. We'll make sure that's
make
very,
that
clear.
Very clear.
Very clear.
The line is about that same dress we were talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Yeah.
All sparkle, sparkle. The first line is, I used to work as a lampshade in a horror house.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's a reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't like him grabbing as a title?
What'd you say?
You don't like him grabbing that quote as a title?
Well, let's just say it wasn't my idea.
Okay. You want to keep the whoring totally separate from the Phyllis Diller career.
Yes. A lot of people are still very nervous about the word whore.
Uh-huh. And you're comfortable with it?
Well, not really.
And the CD, I want to make sure I say all this stuff. You go to laugh.com. There's a CD called Phyllis Diller Live from Los Angeles. And the blog is phyllisdiller.blogspot.com, where you can see some of the great they have. I assume you have thumbnails of the Phyllis Diller art.
Right.
And we're just talking. We finally came up with the women in Australia that introduced you to George Harrison were the Penny Marshall and Cindy.
No, it was just Penny.
Just Penny Marshall.
Penny,
and Cindy Williams, who were from Laverne and Shirley.
Right. Yeah.
That's what you said, too.
Right?
Yeah. And did you ever work with any of the Nutty? Now, you did Ed Sullivan a zillion times,
yes,
right? Did you work with the Nutty Variety Acts? Did you work with, like, you know, Topo Gigio and the Tumblers and all those people?
No, I didn't.
And did you know Liberace?
Oh, God, we were bosom buddies.
Yeah.
I was the one with the bosom.
And that's why you wanted to act like your buddy.
Well, the thing is, we were very close.
Yeah.
Because we both gave credit to a certain book we both read, which we claim changed our lives from unsuccess to success. And the name of the book was The Magic of Believing by Claude Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even a Liberace edition of it. But the thing is, he's the one who urged me to use some of my musical
uh-huh.
Piano background. And it's really why I finally got into the symphony thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked to Jack Benny one day about the symphony. And he said he was thrilled that I was going to do that, and he would send me his overflow. He's a dear, darling man.
Now, we met Liberace when we were off Broadway, came to see our show. We gave him a rhinestone Penn and Teller sweatshirt.
Oh, boy.
And he invited my mom and dad to see him at Radio City Music Hall, and I brought them down from Massachusetts. And I think of all the entertainers that I've been backstage with and how incredibly polite and kind they've always been, the way Liberace treated my mom and dad was like royalty. You know, a couple of people from Greenfield, Massachusetts, and he spent time with them. And this was late. This is when he was already very sick. And yes, he still was so magnanimous.
Oh, was
and sweet.
That his last appearance there?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I went all the way back to see it.
No, yeah.
At opening night, because, and he was ill.
Yeah, he was ill.
Yes.
But he didn't stop him from having
it
all the Jason style.
It was a commitment, and he was there.
It was wonderful.
And he was a wonderful person.
And why isn't there a Phyllis Diller Museum in Las Vegas? How come there's a Liberace one?
Because
where are you going to put all your clothes on display?
Don't have any idea. but you see, he pays for all that.
What do you mean? His?
Well, you pay for your
museum. Oh, yeah, you pay. Yeah.
Bob Hope, you know, he's got streets named after him, airports.
Oh, yeah.
Theaters. But you pay for all that.
He also owns California.
I'm very cheap.
Oh, are you very cheap?
No, I'm frugal.
Yeah, you live in – how long have you had that house? It's a beautiful
41
house.
41 years.
41 years?
Yes.
And
I work for something to leave to my children.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in other things.
Well, it's a beautiful house, and
I love living.
I love that you're still. I love that you're still painting and doing all that stuff.
I have a room to paint. It takes room.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It does. And you mentioned Jack Benny. You said Bob Hope was so helpful to you. And what was Jack Benny like?
Oh, he was adorable. My favorite sketch with Jack was when we did a spoof of The Graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a switch?
That's great. And you were Mrs. Robinson?
Of course.
Of course.
Oh, it was so funny.
Was it on one of the TV specials?
Yeah, well, yes, well, his show.
Uh-huh.
He had his own show. He was a very funny man. And so gentle. This is what the older George Bush kept talking about, a kinder, gentler mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
I'm still dreaming about it.
And Jack Benny and Bob Hope would be part
of
that?
Those guys, they were kind and gentle, and Liberace was too.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah. Great guy.
Here again was a guy who was very, very close to his mother,
mm-hmm.
and they loved each other.
A lot of mama's boys in show business.
Well,
a lot of us around
here.
And
I'm a mama's girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, nothing wrong with that.
And what was it? So you went from, grew up in Ohio.
Yes.
And then how do we...
All the comics did.
Yeah. You brought me a list of the comics that grew up in here. Jim Backus, Kay Ballard, Irma Brombeck, Drew Carey, Tim Conway, Phyllis Diller, Jamie Farr, Dodie Goodman, Bob Hope, Paul Lynn, Dean Martin, Pat McCormick, Martin Mull, Jack Parr, Jack Riley, Danny Thomas, Fred Willard, Jonathan Winters, and, you know, Richard Lewis went to Ohio State.
He made me put him on the list.
what was Dean Martin like? Did you spend much time with Dean Martin?
Oh, he was so adorable, and he refused to rehearse.
Yeah, at all. You did
that
the Dean Martin show.
When you did it, it was funny.
So did you rehearse with someone else that filled in for Dean Martin?
Well, you did, yes. You rehearsed your part of it, if it was a song.
Uh-huh.
But he already knew his, and he simply came. We were there early in the morning for the Dean Martin show, and he would arrive at noon, and we did the show.
Yeah. Now, your first show in San Francisco was 55, that means you had a chance. I don't know if you did. Did you ever see Martin and Lewis work together? Did you ever have any contact with them?
I believe only on television. Or maybe I saw them. They were the funniest.
Yeah. The biggest superstars America's ever
had. They were fantastic.
And they broke up, what, like 58 or something?
And they were together, I forget how long.
Something like that.
And I always wondered why, because they were such a success.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that they weren't getting along together mm-hmm. at all.
Amazing because they had, before that, I mean, Dean Martin had been struggling forever and had gotten nowhere in just weeks after meeting Jerry Lewis.
And he wouldn't have gotten anywhere, probably.
Yeah, probably not.
Because after their big success, then his singing career took off.
Right. But at first it was the Martin and Lewis and then the singing career.
That's it. And you know that they got together accidentally.
Right.
Dean was on singing and Jerry messed around with the record.
They were thrown. He did a pantomime act. He would mouth words by the song.
Somebody was messing around with something. Yeah. And it was so hilarious. They said, "Hey, wait a minute, we got something here
in Atlantic City." In Atlantic City.
Atlantic City.
And when you started in '55, and did your career take off right away?
Yes.
Yeah, right away.
I was never out of work for 48 years.
And you just had did you give up your, how did you go from copywriting and being an ad person to doing full-time comedy? Was that a hard transition? Or?
Well, actually, I quit my job to become an unemployed comic.
Uh-huh.
A gesture.
That's pretty gutsy.
It was gutsy.
Really gutsy.
Yeah.
To be able to do that.
Yeah,
and because you never doubted you'd be successful.
Obviously, I didn't, but everybody else did. In fact, my then boss, who ran the radio station, mm-hmm. it was in the Fairmont Hotel, said, "You can't quit. I'll give you a leave of absence." That's telling me that I'll be back.
You'll be back.
Okay. Okay. And the lady who used to play piano for me when I was doing it as a hobby said, when I told her what I was going to do, she said, "Don't give up your day job."
Exactly.
She actually said that. So you see, with all this negativity being poured all over me, I never doubted.
Never doubted.
Never.
And ever. And you quit your job before you started doing the stand-up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's the way to, you know, Teller, when we first got together, Teller was a high school Latin teacher. He taught high school Latin and Greek. And he was tenured. And I was straight out of high school. There's 7 years difference in the two of us. And I wanted to do an act, and Teller took a 1 year leave of absence. He said he would try it for 1 year. So he's still got a teaching job available to him back in Lawrence Township in New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
And, so you can always go back to copywriting, I'm sure.
I loved it. I loved it.
My guest has been my hero, Phyllis Diller. Her book is out, which she's not sure she likes the title, but it's called Like a Lampshade in a Whorehouse. It's available, of course, like everything on Amazon. Her CD is Phyllis Diller Live from Los Angeles. You can buy that on laugh.com. Go to her blog, phyllisdiller.blogspot.com, to see her art. And that takes a long time to get all her just her basic careers in line. We even cover the details. My mom's favorite performer and one of my heroes, Phyllis Diller. Thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us. In case anybody cares, this is Penn Jillette, and Michael Goudeau is in Las Vegas, and we're on the free FM, CBS FM. Thanks a lot. Phyllis Diller, man. Phyllis Diller.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on free FM.